A person who has turned to violence oftentimes has had some very, very significant trauma in their life. So says psychologist Gregory Jantz. He is our guest right now for this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Dr. Gregory Jantz is going to try and help us to make some sense of some of the terrible shootings and some of the other violent incidents that have occurred in America, and especially to kind of understand those young people. In most cases, it was young people that carried these dastardly deeds out. Dr. Jantz, it's great to have you on the program again. Thank you so much for joining us.
It is always good to speak with you, and it's a difficult topic today.
Yes, it is. And your website is aplaceofhope.com, and I understand there's a new book. If you want to just go ahead and give the title, and then we'll get right into this topic at hand.
Absolutely. Well, this is a landmark book, my life's work on the topic of depression, which we've been doing now for 36 years.
Wow.
And working with folks from all over the country. The book is Healing Depression for Life. Healing Depression for Life.
Okay, very good. Well, the young people that carry out these deeds, we saw the one in California, and there was one in El Paso, there was one in Dayton, Ohio, and then there was an attack in back to California again. Well, that one involved knives and so forth. What's going on? What is the commonality in these attackers who kill random strangers?
You know, when we're dealing with this kind of violence and destruction, we also have to look at just the influence of what I'm going to call evil. There's a line that gets crossed over where evil intent, murder, there's a disconnection with reality. So we've got to factor in, my goodness, there is a spiritual dark side to this as well as what are the common characteristics of a person that turns to this degree of violence? Generally, they're a young male, early 20s or younger. We know that most often they've had a sense of significant trauma in their life, probably some academic failure. Most likely, they're somebody who has had a hard time with relationships. They may be isolated. And then importantly, we know that a line is crossed when they feel a sense of betrayal, a sense of rejection. In other words, they've been severely injured. Maybe it's bully behavior. And then in their mind, and this is where that we cross the line, in their mind, the only thing to do is retaliate and revenge.
Okay, let's, this is deviating from the recent spate of violence, but the Parkland shooter, did you study that case at all? There was a young man. In fact, I believe the authorities were called on him 38 times in advance of the shooting. 38 times they blew it, partly because of a program that said, well, we don't want minorities to end up, you know, disproportionately in prison. It might hurt their academic record and their futures and so forth. But this guy, the anger within him boiled over, and eventually he murdered people with all kinds of academic futures ahead of them, and it was disastrous. But how about if you focus a little bit on his case, because maybe we can learn some things from that.
Well, if we look at that, it's really characteristic of all the cases. They all share some similarities, but it's intensity and degree. Here's some people don't like to say that these are mental health issues, but it is. This is a mental health issue plus some evil mixed in, plus some significant harm that a person has felt, and they're going to retaliate. When we are severely depressed and feel we don't have any hope, some, a very small percentage, go towards destruction of others. Most turn it inward. This is where we see the despondency. This is where we see the depression.
Suicide.
They have turned it inward. And so as we look at this, all these, we can look at each and every shooter, they all had certain characteristics. And you can say, some want to argue that it's not mental health, it's just guns and male violence, but you do not engage in that behavior without significant mental health issues.
Yeah. Well, I hate to keep bringing the example of school shootings, but I did some interviews after Columbine, so this is more than 20 years ago, and I'll never forget what somebody told me that was a young person in Columbine about half a year after the horrible, terrible shooting incident. They said that in front of all these kids during lunchtime, and maybe any faculty members or adults that were there at present at the lunch time, and this would be probably a couple hundred people, some bully took a milkshake and spilled it upside down on the head of one of those two later shooters.
Yep.
And humiliated the guy in front of all these people. And you know how high school is and so forth, but that's just terrible. And that doesn't justify anything in terms of what Eric Harris did later with shooting and killing people, but at least it helps to understand some of the anger he might have felt psychologically. And he, of course, was one of the two shooters.
And that this is one of the things that happens. They feel a sense of great betrayal, rejection, and many were victims of bully behavior. So now we have cyberbully behavior. So this victimization or sense of victimization, in their mind, the only way to feel powerful is to act out and be destructive. So you described a very good situation, which could be a trigger point. Generally, there's a trigger point.
Oh, okay. In the case of the young man shooting in Gilroy, California, a couple weeks ago, he was asked, I guess somebody randomly said, "Why are you doing this?" And he shouted out, "Because I'm very angry." And then he went on his little killing spree. And apparently the police shot him within 30 or 60 seconds of him starting. So I mean, thankfully, he didn't get to kill that many people. But he said, "Because I'm very angry." Where does anger fit into all this?
Yes. You look at where the anger comes from. That's that sense of, I have to get even. That's that sense of revenge, because the perception is, I have been so severely hurt and harmed, and the pain that this person feels is so great, I'm going to inflict that pain on others. I'm going to cause harm to others. And that's what they do. Here's the thing. We know there's similarities, but we don't always know how to predict a person's behavior. Some will act out, and again, some will turn it inward. When we're dealing with, because of depression, we're dealing with record numbers of suicide. And if you look at even the ages of 12 to 17 and the number of suicides that we're having in our youth. So we've got a generation that feels hopeless, they feel despondency about their futures. So we're looking at it, you know, the World Health Organization tells us that this is a worldwide problem of depression. It's the number one disability in the world. Now, that's remarkable to say that.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the El Paso case, because some on the left are just trying to lay this directly at the feet of President Trump, although they conveniently ignore a lot of facts. Like, number one, that guy was apparently an eco-extremist who felt that the world would be better off without a lot more people, and the world should thank him, therefore, for what he's about to do, and so forth. But what are your thoughts in terms of blaming the president for the El Paso shooter?
You know, we can do all the blame and blame anybody we want, but the person had their own responsibility. They had their own, we'll call it a mental health illness. They were responsible for what they chose to do. And if that person felt there were too many people on planet Earth and he was going to kill, that's a person that is influenced by evil. Mm. And there's a lot of things that we probably don't know yet.
Yeah.
But it's not to be blamed on anybody. That person holds the responsibility.
Okay, in the case of the Dayton, Ohio shooter, it's my understanding that one of his quote-unquote friends, about half a year or some time before the incident, said that I stopped, you know, friending him when he pulled a gun on me. But apparently the guy didn't tell the police or anything about that incident. Obviously, there are indications that, hey, something's wrong here. How about a few tips on indications to what to watch out for?
Sure. You know, when we see somebody who they disconnect from normal peers or friends and they isolate, and we begin to see a greater degree of isolation and what I'll call just erratic behavior, they are withdrawing into another world. Could be an online world. These are oftentimes indication, too, of just depression. A person is isolated. They're disconnecting. We also know that a preoccupation with violence certainly is can be a factor. And we need to look at a warning sign is, who are the influencers in this person's life? Who are they following? And what's the role of social media in a person's life? Is there addiction? Is there drugs and alcohol and other addictions factoring in here?
Yeah, and like you know, going back to influencers and so forth, if you have somebody, let's say, that idolizes Charles Manson or somebody that makes Adolf Hitler out to be a hero, for example, in the case of Columbine, it's my understanding they chose April 20 specifically because that was Adolf Hitler's birthday. And so obviously there's a lot of clues that we all learn, you know, but as they say, hindsight is always 20/20.
Yeah, a lot of clues. So often we hear things like, well, I thought something was wrong with him or something was unusual. And people don't always trust that sense of intuition that something's off.
Hmm. Okay, where does Jesus fit in terms of a potential solution? I mean, the solution, ultimately.
Well, think about it this way. If these people were following Jesus, the behavior would be different.
Totally. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So who are we following? Who are we following? And today, you know, we have the hope of Christ and the hope of the future. Many times a person is attacking the very hope that they have, and they don't always understand that.
Hmm. All right, we have a minute left or so. What else would you want to add about this whole spate of violence that we're seeing here lately? This seems to be unusual. It seems to be almost like a crescendo of it right now.
Yes, and one always follows the next. They tend to run in patterns and pairs.
Oh, copycat.
Pardon me?
Copycat cases?
A copycat, yes.
Okay.
Yep. Yes. We also want to just speak to those who are struggling today with this deep depression. And you don't feel violent, you don't feel that, but you feel despondent and hopeless about your life and maybe at times suicidal. I just want to speak some words of hope in all this.
Sure.
And that we know that there's a way out. And we know that the missing pieces to that puzzle can be found. And so I just want to speak, there is hope. And we want to be that, not only voice of hope, but help put together that plan of healing.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that in my own life, because we have about half a minute left, one of the things that I have found really helpful, and I've been doing this for about a year and a half, is every morning and every night I go through my mind about 20 to 30 different scriptures, and they're all positive statements. You know, like, he who began a good work in you will complete it until the day of Christ Jesus. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. The Lord will fulfill his purpose in me. You know, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God and to those who are called according to his purposes. Does this kind of thing help, I mean, to really renew your mind in Christ?
We've got to be putting renewal in our mind and truth and hope. And when I say truth, there's something about the renewing of the mind with the scriptures. It's a reorientation to help us when we lose that perspective. And we live in a world where it's easy to lose that perspective. So I like what you're doing.
Huh. Okay, aplaceofhope.com, Dr. Gregory Jantz, J-A-N-T-Z. Thank you, Dr. Jantz. All the best.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.